Hello and welcome to Dream Gardens. I'm your host, Jody Lee Mott. On the last podcast, I talked a little about the focus of Dream Gardens, which is to talk to people who are interested in kids lit about their favorite kids' books. The thing is, when I use a phrase like children's books, it actually refers to a whole range of books across many ages. My focus, however, is going to be a little narrower, primarily on middle grade fiction. If you don't know what I mean by middle grade fiction, it might be useful to briefly lay out the age division categories of children's books, and why I'm focusing on this one in particular. Let's start with those books for the youngest readers, picture books. I'm sure you know what a picture book is, anything by Dr. Seuss, for example, and I love picture books. Unfortunately, because the illustrations are such an important part of the story, I felt that would be difficult to convey in an audio podcast, at least for me. There are also chapter books, which are books for emerging readers, that is, books young readers can start to read on their own. Again, there are a lot of excellent books here, like the Magic Treehouse series, but the purpose of these books tends to focus on building reading skills rather than complex characters and plots, so I'm going to set those aside too. Now, middle grade books, which I mentioned are going to be the main focus of this podcast, are independent reading books for kids roughly 7 to 12 years of age, and include such works as Because of Winn-Dixie, The Spiderwick Chronicles, and The Watsons Go to Birmingham. They cover every genre, from fantasy to historical fiction to contemporary realism, and can range from simple short books like Sarah Plain and Tall to far-ranging epics like the Redwall series. They also happen to contain some of my own favorite books, and so I have to admit that part of my focus is for purely selfish reasons. Above middle grade books are young adult or YA books, which are written for older teen readers and generally deal with topics and themes that might be considered too intense or just not appropriate for younger readers. Although there are a fair number of readers in the middle grade age group who are huge fans of YA. Because there are already a number of forums for the promotion of YA, I'll generally stay away from them. However, there are some books that occupy a kind of hazy middle ground between YA and middle grade. Books like Holes and The Giver, which are sometimes categorized as middle grade and sometimes as YA, and I see no reason why not to include them. Now, having said all that, it is possible that from time to time I'll stray outside the very arbitrary bounds I've set here of sticking with middle grade fiction. There are too many good books all around to get too fussed about whether they belong or not. In the end, if there's a book that someone is really passionate about and wants to share with other readers, I certainly won't say no. My guest today is Julie Hembree, who is a librarian and educator in the state of Washington. Her blog, Bulldog Readers and Bobcats Blog, is her forum for sharing your thoughts and interests on books and reading, lesson plans, and technology integration, as well as her own self-made book trailers. Her blog can be found at bellbulldogreaders.edublog.org. Thank you for joining me today, Julie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We talked a little bit before, along with the different things I've mentioned that you do on your blog. There's also something called Books to Africa, a project that you've been involved with. Could you tell us a little bit about that, what that is?
Sure, I'd love to. The Books to Africa is a grassroots project that some students and I started in 2012. We had found some boxes of books in closets, and nobody seemed to want any of them. So I went to the kiddos and I said, hey, you know, we have these books. What do you think we should do with them? And we had been reading the book, The Dot. It was September. And the message of The Dot is, you know, make your mark and see where it takes you. So we decided that maybe we would make our mark by finding somebody who needed them. And that's kind of the basis of how everything started. I'm involved with the Microsoft Expert Educator Group. And so through that, I found some contacts in Africa who have classrooms with no reading materials. So to make a long story short, we've made connections. And since then, we've sent about 5,000 books overseas to two classrooms in South Africa, one classroom in Lesotho, and we just added a small school in Zambia. So it's been a really rewarding project.
That sounds really great. If somebody wanted to learn more about it or wanted to help out in some way, where might they go or what might they do?
Yes, well, we started a brand new website, and it's called the Books to Africa Partnership, and that is www.bookstoafrica.weebly.com. And on there, it has pictures. You can see what we're doing, what our mission is, the projects we're involved with, and there's also a contact page. Because we're always looking for teachers who would be interested in being part of that and adopting one of the schools. And even if what they send is one box of books, you know, that's 85 books, and that is an amazing difference compared to what some of these schools have, because many classrooms just don't have any reading materials whatsoever.
Now, the book you chose is The Honest Truth by Dan Gemeinhardt, published in 2015 by Scholastic Press. For readers who are unfamiliar with the book, what can you tell us about it?
Well, I love Dan Gemeinhardt's book because it is about a mountain that I have the great fortune of seeing most every morning, Mount Rainier. And it's a wonderful adventure story, realistic fiction, where a young boy who has had cancer, back and forth, gone into remission, become live whatsoever, finds out that his cancer is not in remission anymore. And this is greatly upsetting to him. And he's angry. And he decides to take his life in his own hands. So he packs up a backpack and his beloved dog, Bo, and he heads out of town to Seattle, and then tries to make his way to Mount Rainier, because his goal is to choose his way of life, and that is to climb Mount Rainier, because his grandfather, who was a great influence on him, wanted to climb with him, and that didn't work out, but he wants to leave his legacy and have some control at Mount Rainier.
And how were you first introduced to the book? When did you first come across it yourself?
Well, at the school I was at before, I had a student and his mom, Joza and Judy, who were always coming into the library and saying, "Hey, Julie, you need to read this book." And the first time they did that, it was for the one and only Ivan. And this was before it won Newbery. And so I loved that book. And so we had definitely formed quite a trust relationship about reading. And they brought The Honest Truth in and said, "Here's another one. You have to read it. We know you're going to like it." And so I took it home and read it that night and was absolutely enthralled by it. I just love a really great adventure story. And this fits. Plus, I love dogs. And so you put adventure story and dog and heartache, and I'm there.
Now, you mentioned before this book is about a boy who's been going through cancer treatments and finds out they're not working. And it sounds like it's you know, a very sort of dark and sort of very heavy book. What would you tell to a reader who might hear that and might be reluctant to read the book, why they should really give it a chance?
Yeah, it's not a cancer book. And this is a story about a boy, and the cancer is there, but it's almost a side story. It's more about his journey on finding out about himself and empowering himself to make decisions. And so often in the hospital, he's been alone or people are there, but he hasn't had the opportunity to really understand how people are helping him. So this is a coming of age story rather than a cancer story. It's not death and dying and gloom and doom. However, it is quite realistic, because it is a boy who runs away from home and doesn't tell his parents where he's going, and, you know, encounters situations in Seattle where he's beaten up and things aren't going good. And so there's a lot of realism there, but I don't think it to be dismal whatsoever.
You've also mentioned that the setting of this is in Washington State, near Mount Rainier. I mentioned to you before that myself and my wife had a chance to visit Washington State, and so I've actually seen or been around Mount Rainier anyway, and reading the book gave me a sort of very different perspective on reading the book. Now, obviously, you know, a reader shouldn't have to visit the mountain in order to enjoy the book, but what do you think, being familiar with the mountain, how did that affect your own reading of the book?
Well, for me, it made it that much more realistic, because every part that was described from when Mark left Wenatchee, which is a small town in eastern Washington, and got on the bus and or the train, excuse me, and came to Seattle and got off at the train station. Every part of this I was familiar with and I knew, and it just made it more believable to me. And as he makes his way up to Rainier, I knew the towns, and Dan Meinhardt works really hard to bring a lot of the details in that are quite accurate as far as the towns he visits and the river and what it's like when the water is rushing down off of the mountain and getting up to Paradise and starting to make the trek. It's all very realistic. And so it just put me there. I don't think that you have to have seen Mount Rainier, because Dan includes enough details that you can picture it in your mind and it can be however you want. But I loved the realism of it.
There's actually two parallel narratives in this book that switch back and forth, both Mark's and his best friend Jesse. Now, Jesse's conflict that she goes through is very different than Mark's, but there's a certain kind of truth to it as well. In her case, it has to do whether she's going to share some information or not. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about Jesse's own journey through the book.
Yeah, I really identified with Jesse in many ways, because she has been his friend since they were quite young, and they've shared everything together. They've done adventures together. They sit next to each other at school. They share secrets, and she becomes the holder of the secret, and she's in a huge dilemma throughout the story, because she can't figure out at what point do you let go of the secret and tell an adult when you know what the person is going to be doing and that it could be a life or death situation. So she's in quite a quandary for the whole time. And a lot of responsibility has been placed on her by Mark. And I feel the struggle that she goes through in this position that he put her in. She wants to be loyal to him, but she's watching these adults and the anguish that they're going through and wondering, when do I fess up and say I know where he is? I think it's a very real juxtaposition between the two of them.
And there's another character in the book that I think would have been a very different book without it, which is Bo, Mark's dog. Who you mentioned a little bit about. What is, even though Bo doesn't say anything in the book, he has no dialogue, he does bring something, I think, very important to the book. You know, if you want to talk about that a little bit, what does Bo bring to the book or bring to Mark?
He brings a little bit of levity, because, you know, sometimes they're being silly and having fun, but his place, I think, is to help Mark realized that he's not alone. He doesn't have to deal with this cancer journey alone, that there are people or a best friend, like a dog, who can be there to, you know, help with the burden. And it's his role there, I think, is quite important in letting Mark deal with what he's doing. It gives him some strength, I think, to keep going when he wanted to give up. It also taught him quite a few lessons that if Bo hadn't been there, Mark wouldn't have had the opportunity to learn.
We've mentioned, you know, the title of the book is The Honest Truth, and that's like a phrase that Mark repeats over and over again. He makes a statement and says, that's the honest truth, letting the reader, he's being straight with them. Then he is an honest person. But in the end, the court of the truth changes for him, or what the truth is. And we don't want to give too much about the ending of the book, but I think in general, what do you think the author is trying to tell us about, you know, the truth as it appears to us, you know, as we're going through our lives, what we consider, you know, the honest truth?
Yeah, the honest truth is such an interesting phrase, in that are we ever really completely honest with truth? Are there nuances of honesty? And I think that comes up quite a bit, because when Mark has been, and we find out about these nuances a lot through Jesse's pages, where she's talking about reflecting on things that she has done with Mark. And Mark never tells his parents the truth. He tries to protect them from the truth, because he knows if he is too realistic with his parents about how he's feeling, it will upset them even more. So the only person he is honest with is Jesse. And he's not always, I don't know if he's honest with himself and realizing that he can't share with everyone. So that, who are you honest with, and are you really speaking the truth, is the theme that goes through that. And I think we all deal with that as human beings. We want to tell the truth, but I think there's some phrase from some movie at some point, you can't handle the truth. And in some cases, that's real.
I just have one last question for you. For readers who find this book and really do love it, do you have any other recommendations of other books, you know, ones who really do like this book, that they might search out and read as well, either by the author or just books in a similar vein?
Right. Well, Dan has another great book, Some Kind of Courage, which is actually another adventure story set, historical fiction set in the West Coast, that I highly recommend. But, you know, this book reminded me a lot of My Side of the Mountain, which is certainly a classic. And these are stories of kids having to find themselves, or Julia of the Wolves. It doesn't matter if it's a boy or a girl. These are stories about going on an adventure and finding the truth within yourself and figuring out what your strength is.
Oh, and I almost forgot. Is there a particular passage in this book that really stands out for you that you wanted to share for the people listening?
Yeah, there's one section where they're along the river, and for whatever reason, he decides he's going to get in the river, and he wants to cross some rocks. And of course, you know, he's going to fall, because rivers, rocks are slippery. So he does, and miraculously gets out of the water. But there, now he's all wet, and it's nighttime, and it's raining, and he has to dry off. And he's sitting underneath the bridge. And I love the honesty of this part. I closed my eyes and let that thought roll over me. I had fought the river and the cold and the darkness, and I'd won. I looked down at myself squatting in dripping underwear by a fire under the bridge. I started laughing and crying at the same time. It was mostly a happy feeling. Bo still stood beside me, drying his fur by the fire. The flames flickered in his one brown eye and one green. He cocked his head at my strange laughter. I was afraid of dying, I said to him. He whined and licked my bony knee. I scratched him behind his ears. I sniffed at my tears and I laughed again. Here I am on this trip, and I was afraid of dying. I just thought that was such a funny piece, that when he didn't expect to almost die was the time when he did. And he finds that quirky humor. He's a mature enough boy that he can look inside and go, well, isn't that crazy? I didn't expect it. And that's kind of funny. So I enjoyed that. I was going to ask you a question. What did you think the role of the camera was? It's almost like a character. What did you think about that?
Well, I think so. It's a way of he's trying to capture memory or take things in as he's going along, even as he's trying to sort of let things go at the same time. So it's almost that sort of conflict within himself, that he's trying to hold on at the same time he's trying to let things go, which I think that pull is a constant thing throughout the book. So or at least that's how I see the camera, in a way.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because at one point in the book, all of those pictures kind of come up, and you get to understand some of the backstory of the pictures and what's going on. So I liked how that worked, how he wove that in.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Julie, for joining me today and sharing this book. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, because I love talking about books.
Once again, you can find Julie's blog, Bulldog Readers and Bobcats Blog, at bellbulldogreaders.edublog.org. Thank you for joining me on Dream Gardens. The theme music, titled All Together, is provided courtesy of Purple Planet Music. You can visit them at www.purple-planet.com. Podcast cover art is provided by Creative Pro 180, courtesy of Fiverr, which can be found at www.fiverr.com. You can find out more about me at jleemott.com. That's jleemott.com. Or contact me at jodymott@gmail.com. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep growing, and keep reading.